The Healer, The Healing Work of Mary Baker Eddy, compiled and arranged by David Keeston. Part 5, Fifth Continuation. Number 249, June 1903, in front of Christian Science Hall. Miss Elizabeth Earl Jones and Mrs. Hazard remained in Concord, New Hampshire, the Tuesday and Wednesday after Mrs. Eddy spoke from the balcony at Pleasant View, because they wanted to attend the Wednesday evening testimonial meeting in Christian Science Hall. On that Wednesday afternoon, Miss Jones had the privilege of seeing Mrs. Eddy again and of witnessing a healing by her, which, she said, was accomplished in much less time than it takes to tell of it. See also 12 Years with Mary Baker Eddy by Irving C. Tomlinson, page 52. Mrs. Eddy always took her drive in the afternoons, except in very bad weather. Often she drove by Christian Science Hall. There must have been 10 or 12 of us there. Mr. Irving C. Tomlinson, CSD, and his sister lived in a wing at the rear of the house, and a patient was to call for a treatment just prior to our leader's drive by the hall. The patient had come for her first treatment in Christian Science. She drove up in a handsome opened carriage with a driver and a footman on the top seat in front. The carriage was open, the top folded back, because it was a beautiful early day in June. With great difficulty, Mr. Tomlinson and the footman helped the dear little old lady, Mrs. Jeanette Glick, out of the carriage, and she stood all bent over. She could not lift up herself at all. She joined the little group of scientists on the stoop. Her carriage had just driven off, when around the bend in the road came an old-fashioned type of closed carriage. The carriage was very small but handsome. The horses were fine bays, and the driver in uniform was Calvin Fry. As Mrs. Eddy drove by, we all waved to her, but she seemed to see no one but this dear little old lady. Mrs. Eddy looked at her with that same lingering, loving, searching look that she had given me the year before. Only this time, our leader was not serious, but exceedingly happy-looking. She had the most heavenly expression on her lovely face. Mrs. Eddy always presented a picture of refined and exquisite loveliness, and she was, even when I knew her, the most beautiful woman I had ever seen. Indeed, I was so intently looking at this beautiful expression on Mrs. Eddy's face, and was so filled with joy at the sight of her countenance, that I forgot the dear little old lady close by who had come for Mr. Tomlinson to treat her. Mrs. Eddy did not seem to see any of us but this little old lady. She looked at her intently with a deep searching look, as if she was discerning and meeting the old lady's innermost need. I knew what she was doing. For once she had looked at me that way. It all happened so quickly, as Mrs. Eddy's carriage passed by and was soon out of sight. Immediately, that dear old lady straightened right up and dropped her cane. She was standing erect, and also no longer leaning upon Mr. Tomlinson's arm. I heard her say joyously to Mr. Tomlinson, "I do not need a treatment. I am healed." And so she was. Her face was flushed and radiant, and she was upright, strong, and free. It all happened in much less time than it takes to tell it. I shall never forget that heavenly expression on our leader's face. This was the kind of healing work Mrs. Eddy did, and it certainly convinced one of the practical truth of her teachings. From Luke, "And behold, there was a woman which had a spirit of infirmity 18 years, and was bowed together, and could in no wise lift up herself. And when Jesus saw her, he called her to him, and said unto her, Woman, thou art loosed from thine infirmity. And he laid his hands on her, and immediately she was made straight and glorified God." Number 250. After the gathering of church members at Pleasant View in 1903, I was leaving the grounds when I saw a young lady apparently much affected. She told me her story. When the scientists entered the grounds of our leader's house, she was among the last to go in, and was unable to see or hear our leader when she spoke to us from the balcony of her home. At first, the girl was bitterly disappointed, but then she began to work for more love and humility, and to thank God that others could see and hear. And she felt grateful for that. If any must be crowded out, it was herself and not another. She thus mastered the error and was really very happy. Our leader, after leaving us, passed through the front door in order to enter her carriage for her daily drive. In leaving the house, she passed right by this dear girl and stopped, put her hand tenderly on the girl's shoulder, looked deep into her eyes, smiled, and said, "Parting only makes the heart grow fonder." During Mrs. Eddy's carriage ride that day, another woman testified to a wonderful healing of a woman who lived in Concord, New Hampshire. Apparently, this woman was paralyzed on one side, destitute, and she had a home life which was so unbearable that she could no longer stay. Because of her state, she decided to leave, never to return. On her way, she noticed the 10,000 people walking to Pleasant View to hear Mrs. Eddy. Not knowing what was taking place, she followed them to find out the attraction. Unfortunately, she was so far on the edge of the crowd that she was unable to hear Mrs. Eddy speak. When Mrs. Eddy turned around and returned to the house, to this woman's helplessness, hopelessness, and despair was added this fresh disappointment at not hearing what she knew must have been a very important message to have attracted that size crowd. She turned around with tears flowing freely down her face to return to Concord. As she walked along, she came to a vacant lot. She crossed this lot to the street on the other side. and there she stood, weeping bitterly, her face drenched with tears, when she saw a team of horses coming. She stood idly watching them, and as they approached, she recognized the woman in the carriage to be the same one who had spoken from the balcony. So she waited to see her at close range. As the carriage passed, Mrs. Eddy leaned forward and looked at her. No word was spoken, but the woman was instantly healed. She returned to her home and found the home condition healed. The woman, who was healed, later related, "Never before nor since have I seen the love and compassion in any human face that I saw in Mrs. Eddy's when she leaned forward and looked at me." Number 251. Mrs. Eddy would not tolerate error in any form, error being her term for anything unlike the true sense of harmony and perfection that God is and man perpetually reflects. At one time, when Mrs. Eddy was having her meal brought to her room, the worker who was to bring her meal had a severe cold. She did her best to hide it as she approached the doorway to Mrs. Eddy's room, whereupon Mrs. Eddy looked up, took in the entire mental atmosphere of the worker at a glance, and said in a commanding tone, "Drop it." The worker instantly dropped the tray, dishes, dinner, and all. After cleaning up the mess, she realized that she was completely free of the cold. Number 252. The following is an excerpt from the Reminiscences of Elizabeth Earle Jones, CSB. "I had the great privilege of coming in contact with our beloved leader. Mrs. Eddy was not like other people. One felt a power in her presence that shook one to the very base of his or her being. One little girl who, with her mother, saw our dear leader for the first time, came away crying. As she held her mother's hand, she sobbed, 'Oh, Mummy, I want to be good. When you call me, I want to come. I want to do everything you tell me to do. I want to be good.'" She had been a difficult child and not inclined to be obedient. She had manifested a lot of human will. But in even a few moments in our leader's presence, her whole thought was so lifted up and transformed that she became obedient, loving, and considerate. Number 253. Calvin Fry suffered a number of deadly attacks, and on more than one occasion, several of the students in the home witnessed Mrs. Eddy's work in bringing him back from death. John Sulco and his sister, who was also working at Pleasant View, were the only two witnesses to one such occurrence in 1903. Whether it was as serious as the other attacks is not known, but Miss Sulco thought it was, for she was the one who found Calvin slumped over his desk, and she was sure he was dead. Mrs. Eddy was summoned immediately, and as John and his sister watched, The leader brought Calvin back to consciousness in about 5 minutes. Number 254. When one is drunk without wine, mesmerism, apathy, he will talk with a thick tongue something like a drunken man. I can always tell it. They must arouse out of such a sense. I, Mrs. Eddy, was in a streetcar once when a drunken man came in and sat down. I said mentally, "You are a fool and don't know it." I kept thinking that and nothing else. In a few moments, that man was perfectly sober. It had roused his dormant sense to the situation, and when he saw, that was the end of it. Number 255. Mrs. Weller went with Mrs. Eddy to a furniture shop to help her select some chairs. The clerk who was waiting on them wore a bandage over one eye. Mrs. Eddy seemed absorbed in thought while they were being shown the chairs, paying very little attention to them, and when pressed as to which she liked best, she said, "Any that we can sit on." Mrs. Weller was annoyed at Mrs. Eddy's indifference and told the clerk that they would come back the next day and give a decision about the chairs. They were on the second floor of the shop with two doors opening out, one into a stairway, the other to a chute for sliding boxes down to the sidewalk. Mrs. Eddy opened one door and went down the stairs. Mrs. Weller, in her perturbation, opened the other door and stepped on the chute and slid down to the sidewalk, where Mrs. Eddy arrived in time to see her picking herself up. Mrs. Weller reproached Mrs. Eddy for her lack of attention to the business at hand. And Mrs. Eddy replied, "Could I think of chairs when the man was suffering?" When Mrs. Weller went the next day to see about the chairs, the clerk said, "Who was that lady with you yesterday? I had an abscess on my eye, and when she went out, I took the bandage off, and there was not a sign of it left." Mrs. Eddy had a cook who showed resentment and egotism. She held herself above menial labor and thought she had enough understanding of Christian Science to do higher work. Mrs. Eddy could not eat the food she cooked. Her comment was, "I cannot eat it. It is poison." The cook was sent away. The one who took her place loved to serve Mrs. Eddy, and she ate the food she prepared and relished it. At one time, Mrs. Eddy ordered a dress made, and while making it, the dressmaker prayed to be sweet, pure, true, and grateful, so that the dress would be a proper raiment for our leader. Mrs. Eddy loved the dress, and wore it until finally it became shabby. So she ordered another one made just like it. This time the dressmaker was having trouble with her own help and was irritable and cross. Mrs. Eddy could not wear it. "I cannot feel happy in it. Take it away." Yet it appeared to be exactly like the old one. Number 256. A small but typical example of her charitable attitude was recounted by a Methodist minister, E. N. Larmore, who in 1903 was a seminary student and acting pastor of the Methodist Episcopal Church at Bow, New Hampshire, Mrs. Eddy's birthplace. Sending out an appeal for funds to repair the church, he received a reply from her offering to give $50 toward a bell if the church could raise enough to meet the balance of the bell's cost. Since they had no intention of adding such a feature, her suggestion at first caused some derision. But soon, others pledged the additional funds necessary to buy a 900-pound bell. Notified of this, Mrs. Eddy sent a check for $100, about $3,000 today. Young Larmore, puzzled, made a special visit to Pleasant View, and she explained to him that $50 was for the bell, $50 for the repairs. Having stimulated them to effort beyond their original intention, she was now responding to their original request. On the same occasion, noting the heavy glasses without which Larmore could not see a thing, she asked him why he was wearing them, and added ironically, "For style?" When he returned from Pleasant View, he found himself wholly unable to read until he laid his glasses aside, for good, as it turned out. 50 years later, his wife wrote that his eyesight was perfect for the rest of his life. Mrs. Eddy's charities sometimes took a very unexpected form. From Science and Health. Sight, hearing, all the spiritual senses of man are eternal. They cannot be lost. Their reality and immortality are in spirit and understanding, not in matter. Hence their permanence. Number 257. At the time the church in Concord, New Hampshire was being erected, Mrs. Ella Peck Sweet went into the building and slipped on a board or something and hurt herself. Some of the workers at Pleasant View tried to help her, but without much success. Mrs. Eddy asked them what was the matter with Mrs. Sweet. They answered that she was all right. Our leader said, but she is not all right. She then asked Mrs. Sweet what the trouble was, and the latter replied that it was all right. It was being met. Mrs. Eddy said, it is not being met. Then our leader asked her how she was working, and Mrs. Sweet answered that she was knowing that there were no accidents in mind. Mrs. Eddy replied, that would not heal you. You were brought here to help me. You are one of my best workers. And then pointed out to her that the trouble was only an argument to interfere with her usefulness to Mrs. Eddy. By the time our leader finished talking to her, Mrs. Sweet was healed. It was in this conversation that Mrs. Eddy said to Mrs. Sweet, I will say this for your comfort, that if you were brought here with every bone in your body broken, you would respond to my treatment. From Psalms. All that hate me whisper together against me. Against me do they devise my hurt. An evil disease, say they, cleaveth fast unto him. And now that he lieth, he shall rise up no more. Yea, mine own familiar friend, in whom I trusted, which did eat of my bread, hath lifted up his heel against me. But thou, O Lord, be merciful unto me, and raise me up, that I may requite them. By this I know that thou favorest me, because mine enemy doth not triumph over me. And as for me, thou upholdest me in mine integrity, and settest me before thy face for ever. Again from Psalms. I will extol thee, O Lord, for thou hast lifted me up, and hast not made my foes to rejoice over me. O Lord, my God, I cried unto thee, and thou hast healed me. O Lord, thou hast brought up my soul from the grave. Thou hast kept me alive, that I should not go down to the pit. Number 258. In 1904, the International League of Press Clubs produced what was to be a journalistic masterpiece. The volume, Bohemia, was to have articles expressly prepared for it by men of distinction, presidents, ex-presidents, kings, admirals, etc. One of these few specially selected men of distinction was a woman, Mary Baker Eddy. The Concord Monitor stated, "It is a notable fact that Mrs. Eddy's is the only contribution in the book which deals with other than a literary or personal theme." And this will be taken as another indication of the widening scope of her recognition and influence. Although it was desired to make a special presentation of this volume to Mrs. Eddy, she graciously declined, as her work for the world and her church consumed her every moment. One of the editors of this famous publication later found out just how valuable Mrs. Eddy's time was. Arthur Talmage Abernethy had come in contact with Mrs. Eddy in his editorial capacity, and at a later date made an impromptu social call at Pleasant View, when he found himself in Concord with free time. In response to his message asking for an interview, the busy leader sent down her message on a card, "I am very busy. I would rather give you $1,000 than a minute of my time." In a light, jesting mood, Mr. Abernethy returned the card with a penned note, "My initials are ATA. A.T. Abernethy may have expected to be received, but he was not expecting what he did receive, which left him stunned and somewhat ashamed. As he was leaving the house, a messenger handed him Mrs. Eddy's engraved card with compliments of, in Mrs. Eddy's handwriting above her name. Her handwriting was also on the accompanying check made out to Mr. Abernethy for $1,000. This represented the staggering sum of about $30,000 in equivalent value of today's money. From Proverbs. The integrity of the upright shall guide them. Number 259. A lady came to me for healing. She had been advised by her cousin to take up Christian Science. This lady told me how her cousin had become interested in science. The cousin lived in Providence, Rhode Island, and had been a theosophist. She evidently thought it was quite right to silently, mentally rob the minds of others, until she learned the way in Christian Science and realized that the most sacred thing in the world is the individual's right to the privacy and absolute freedom of his own mentality, untouched and uncontrolled by anyone, even by his best friend, unless he asks for help, or unless a situation arises where he cannot ask for help, and his friend knows that his help would be desired. So, this lady, who was at the time a theosophist, needed healing, and attempted to draw in secret upon Mrs. Eddy's healing power. For 3 days, at the same hour, she went into what she called the silence, and concentrated her thoughts upon Mrs. Eddy in order to draw Mrs. Eddy's thought upon herself. The first day, she felt absolutely nothing. The second day, it was the same. The third day, as soon as she began her attempted mental trespass into our leader's mentality, she felt a great flood of love and light. She had never dreamed of such love. It was a revelation to her. And she seemed to hear the sweetest voice say to her, "Don't, dear." It waked her up to see the error of the whole thing she had been believing in and practicing. And the experience showed her how Christ-like was Mrs. Eddy's thought and method of working and practicing. She purchased Science and Health at once, gave up Theosophy, and became a devoted Christian Scientist. Of course, Saul, on his way to Damascus, had his thought illumined by the Lord in a similar manner. See Acts 22.